Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
As someone in the chat room just said, here we go. Another exciting Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, along with my, so smart, cool host, cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. Great to be here in a beautiful, beautiful Southern Sense afternoon. It is just after 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 4th of June. How time is flying. I am happy to be back. I'm happy to have our host here, I hope.
You mean a host? I am here.
I'm sorry, our guest. I meant to say our guest. Excuse me.
Yeah, our guest today is going to be Dr. Wyron Brook. He's the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. He's also a contributor to Forbes magazine. He's been on Glenn Beck and Hannity and Cavuto and CNN and MSNBC and all over the place. So he'll be joining us at quarter after the hour. Want to welcome everyone aboard. Hope you all had a great, great weekend. And we've got someone we haven't seen in the chat room in a long, long time, our friend Mark Ross. Good afternoon. Want to say hi to BMW, Booty, Jermaine, and Cuz. So we're going to have a rock and rolling good show here today.
Yeah, I don't know if we've done this, but we've got to congratulate Jermaine. His wife gave birth to a baby boy, Nathan Edward, I think. But anyway, congratulations, Jermaine.
Well, welcome aboard to another conservative in this world. We need more of them, Jermaine. Keep popping them out, tell her.
Yeah, I was asking him when I was talking to him when his mother was sick and as she was slowly passing. As how's the boys? He goes, not a worry in the world. He said they're fighting in the driveway over there. I guess they're playing basketball. You know how it is, growing family.
Everyone that listens to this show knows that we started off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication goes out to Army Specialist Michael K. Dolling. So, Mike, if you could pull up the Army mix for us.
is playing.
All right, this is from the Berkshire Eagle. The life and ultimate sacrifice of U.S. Army Specialist Mitchell K. Dowling, who was killed May 14, 2013 in Afghanistan, were remembered during a moving service at St. Agnes Church. Nearly 600 mourners attend the funeral, including Governor Deval Patrick, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, U.S. Representative Richard Neal, Berkshire County's legislative delegation, and representatives of the Army, and from a number of military service organizations, including the Dalton American Legion. Among several speakers during the service, Dowling's widow, Samantha, delivered a eulogy that Neal later termed one of the most powerful moments of my long political career. Some might not understand how she could speak during the funeral. Samantha Dowling said, "But you have to understand who I was married to. I was married to a soldier, an American soldier. And most important, I was married to a hero." Halting at times with obvious emotion, she and her husband provided an example of quiet courage and dedication worth emulating, adding at one point, "I still need to laugh and smile for Mitchell." She described her 24-year-old husband as the love of my life and a good listener and friend. She talked about the role his extended family and hers helped in shaping his dedication to duty and to his family. Her remarks were applauded by those inside the church. The response of the community, the military, the state and local officials was truly overwhelming, said Dowling's father, Kurt W. Dowling of Dalton. "I thought it was a beautiful service." That support, he said, helped his family get through the experience. "It was the most difficult thing I have ever done in my life," Kurt Dowling said. The area around the brick-walled Catholic Church on Main Street was blocked off for the two-hour service. About 65 members of the Patriot Guard and American Legion Riders motorcycle organizations from chapters in Massachusetts and New York State stood in line on both sides of the street, holding American flags that fluttered in a chilly breeze under a leaden sky. The Massachusetts Army National Guard's Color and Honor Guards participated in the funeral, including transporting the flag-draped coffin and precisely folding flags following the service for presentation to the widow, Dowling's parents, Kurt and Brenda, and other family members. Dowling was killed on May 14th, along with three other soldiers, by an IED in Afghanistan. He was awarded the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, and other medals. His wish was to be buried in Lewiston, Idaho, next to his grandfather, Kenneth Sadler, a Purple Heart recipient who served in the Korean War. Reverend Christopher Malatesta, who celebrated the Mass with Timothy McConnell, Bishop of the Diocese of Springfield, said he hoped the support and concern shown by those attending the service at the start of the Memorial Day weekend would bring the honor and respect that they deserve to all who enter the military. "In such an honorable and generous service, he has lost his life," Malatesta said. He added that life is not measured in years, and it became evident to him during the calling hours on Thursday that the young soldier and high school graduate had lived life fully and made a strong impression on those around him. Photographs on display during the wake showed how much he valued the time he had with you. He wrote his story on your life, and that can't be taken away from you. Quoting from those who served with Dowling, Trainer said that the young soldier had matured beyond others his age and grew into a true combat leader while in the war zone. He said Mitch was out on the front again, putting himself in harm's way. Following the service, military honors were conducted, including the playing of taps and a 21-gun salute and ceremonial folding and presentation of the flags. This show is dedicated to all the men and women who have served for us and given their ultimate sacrifice, who are serving and who will serve in the future. To them, we dedicate this song, "My Name is America," by Todd Allen Herndon. God bless them all.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt,
that's My Name is America, Todd Allen Herndon. All right, Mike, we're going to have ourselves a rocking and rolling good show. You got to see all these people that are popping up in the chat room here today.
Yes, nice to see everybody. Before our guest calls in, we're talking a little bit, tell our listeners, we're talking a little bit about the, before we went on the air. So what's your take on these IRS hearings? Seems like you got five people all pointing the finger at each other or dead people. And Bush still to blame.
I think my neighbors heard me screaming at the TV, and mind you, I live on an acre, so that's some loud screaming at the TV. If anyone's caught any of this morning's testimony, if you recognize the one woman with the long brown hair. She happens to be a friend of mine, Diane Bellison, with the Lawrence, the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition. She's the president of the Lawrence County area chapter up there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did notice her. What do you think of that? I forgot that guy's name, that idiot from Georgia. Every time he would talk, I would think of Irving R. Levine from NBC. But, I mean, what a liar. I mean, you know, what happened to the days you used to practice on the witness stand? You know, where you were very good at lying because you had practiced it 80 times. Jeez, these people are not even good liars.
No. They are professionally elected liars in Congress. You know, let's get it right. You know, you've got Irving who turned around and blamed Bush, and then to the victims that are testifying, demanded from them why they didn't come to Congress with a law for them to implement. Excuse me, it's because the law was not enforced that they were there. There were criminal acts committed against these individuals. I mean, felony was committed. Dr. Eastman sat there and says, I've got proof of this felony. And Congress uphold the laws that are written. How much do we have to take through your head?
Great. Those people should be executed, and I firmly believe that. They should be brought to trial, if found guilty, executed. This is exactly the reason they started with the Constitution after the Declaration, after the war. This is the reason they started at the very beginning. Amendments, number one, and number twos, and number threes. And I mean, this is exactly, this is horrible. And when these people perjure themselves like this, excuse me, I mean, there's just no shame. I mean, everybody knows my great distaste for George Bush, but to try to blame it on George Bush is beyond, I mean, that is just absolutely ridiculous. And I'll tell you, this is, if there's ever a reason right now to firmly abolish federal income tax and, I mean, the IRS, it is now. It is absolutely now.
It is true. It is true. And the worst part is there's McDermott. Now, if anyone doesn't remember Congressman McDermott, he was one of those that went courtesy of Saddam Hussein, who paid for his trip, to Baghdad prior to the Iraqi invasion. He accompanied Turban Durbin. And these are the guys that were trying to say, oh, he's not doing anything against his people. He's not pulling people off of the street. He's not executing men or raping the women. This is McDermott, and this is the guy who is blaming the victims of the IRS, overstepping the federal law, and this is an elected congressman, and this is what they put in Congress. All right, I do believe we have our caller coming in, and let me just bring this on. I do believe this is Dr. Brooke, is it?
That's right. I'm here.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you today? Yeah. Welcome back.
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me back on.
Nice to have you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Yes, we've got Dr. Warren Brooke of the Ayn Rand Institute. He's the executive director, as well as a columnist for Forbes. He's been on Wall Street, USA Today, Investors Daily Business, CNN, MSNBC, Fox. Doctor, you're all over the place.
I try. It's a lot of work to do, you know.
You just arrived at a good time, Doc, because Annie was about to grab her baseball bat and head down to the IRS hearings in D.C. She's
Well, if only it was that simple, huh?
Doc, what is your take on all that?
Oh, I think it was inevitable in the sense that once you set up an agency with the kind of power that the IRS has, that power is going to be abused. You know, in my view, it's always been abused. But what's unique about this is that it's being abused for political reasons. I think that's new, but again, inevitable. It was bound to happen by one party or the other. That once you have this incredible tool of the IRS that can reach into all of our tax returns, that can determine the fate of people and organizations, and that is not accountable really to anybody. You know, this is what's going to happen. When you give people the power of coercion, when you give people bureaucrats a gun, in a sense, they're going to land up using it. And the only way to stop this kind of abuse is to get rid of the IRS. As long as an IRS exists, this is going to happen. Now, you know, the fact that it happened and the scale that it did is an indictment of the Obama administration and their willingness to subvert freedom of speech and their willingness, you know, to go after people they don't like. But you know, this is what you get with this administration. We elected them. We're paying the price for it. And, of course, at the end of the day, the only way to solve this is to get rid of the IRS, which would solve a lot of problems. It would clean up our tax code.
Yeah, I think it's true, because I was watching it, because a friend of mine was one of the people testifying, Diane Belson, for Lawrence County here in South Carolina. And it was one of the reasons why we chose our Tea Party here in Beaufort, South Carolina, to not incorporate at all, to not take donations, to not endorse candidates going into a primary, to operate as if we're just a loose association of friends, of like-minded friends. And we figured if we stayed out of the reach of the IRS, we could operate more freely. You know, I admire Diane and her group for wanting to go by becoming a 501c4. And, you know, maybe because she did, this is why this is all coming up to light, because brave people like her decided to put their foot down, get an attorney, and fight them.
Sure, but we have a completely perverse tax code that requires us to get 501c3s and 501c4s and all this nonsense, which is just bureaucratic filings. I mean, I would like to see a tax code where all of that is gone. If we have to have taxes, let's make it simple. Let's make it so there is no such thing as a for-profit or non-for-profit, because neither one pay taxes. Corporate taxes should be zero. The only people who pay the corporate taxes are the consumers. Prices go up. If you make corporate taxes zero, then what difference is it how I incorporate? And if you free up free speech in terms of campaigns, why do I need to be a C4? Why do I need to be registered? All we need is for the candidates to be able to identify where the money's coming in from. We need simplicity, and what we need is a tax code that is dramatically revised from what it is today. Get rid of the IRS and a campaign finance system, which allows anybody to give as much money as they want to whomever they want. It's none of anybody's business how much money I give to any particular campaign, or whether I can or cannot give. You know, disclosure is good, but limits are basically a perversion of free speech. And I'd say this, the reason we're where we are today is because we've limited free speech, right? We've limited political speech. If you're wealthy, you can't give as much as you want to give to different campaigns. And luckily, the Supreme Court has loosened that up a little bit. But there's still these ridiculous rules and ridiculous laws that limit our ability to express ourselves with regard to campaigns and with regard to what happens in politics. If we got rid of all that, then a lot of these abusive controls would go away, and we would resurrect, you know, the Bill of Rights. We would resurrect the idea of free speech, which is not accidentally the first right. It's the First Amendment. It's there for a reason, because without free speech, you don't have freedom. The attack on free speech that the IRS is engaged in here is a direct attack on freedom. It's a direct attack on liberty. And what we need to do is not just go after the IRS, but go after all campaign finance laws, because they're all corrupting the idea of free speech.
Yeah, and I find it amazing that, you know, here they are doing the testifying, and you've got Congressman McDermott that looks at these six victims and then blames them for the IRS, you know, demanding all these details, blames them for the IRS breaking federal law. And I just sat back, and my co-host knows that when I get this little giddy temper up,
look, you know, this is partisan politics. This is the left. The left has no problem in distorting the truth, in distorting reality, in making stuff up, in lying bold-faced to us, and in accusing and coming after us for our virtues, not our vices. And you know, the problem I see is that we on the right are way too timid in fighting that. We let them get away with it. We don't call them on it. We don't fight. We don't present an alternative vision to what they're presenting, and they land winning up. We need to stand up to them, and we need to call them for what they really are, and we need to present a vision for America that's different from theirs. And until we do that, we'll keep losing. We're losing. We have to be honest. We're losing. We've been losing for 100 years, and we'll continue to lose until we you know, come together around a new vision for America. And that new vision for America, by the way, is a return to the old vision. It's a return to the vision of the Founding Fathers.
Absolutely. And I, what I find amazing is that, you know, for, as you said, for 100 years, we have been silent. We were the silent majority. And as conservatives, by that very word, our actions are, you know, conservative in nature. I mean, I'm trying to think of another way to say it. But we don't take these huge, giant steps. We don't take the megaphones out on the street corner. You know, we just quietly talk to each other and say, all right, fine, you know, I respect you for having a difference of opinion. This is mine, that is yours, and let's just, you know, shake hands on it. We've got to no longer shake hands. We've got to turn around and put the gloves on and throw that right cross, right across the chin. We've got
to
break
those gloves. And I think we need to. And I think we need to ditch the. I mean, I'd love to see people ditch the term conservative. I dislike that term immensely. What are we trying to conserve? You know, what is it that we're trying to do? We are the true liberals and the true progressives. We want economic growth. We want individual freedom. There's nothing conservative about that, and there's everything that's radical and progressive and liberal about that. We're for liberty. Liberal comes from the word liberty. They're the ones who want to reduce liberty, reduce freedom, and increase collectivism and statism. So we need some new terminology, some more exciting terminology, some more forward-looking terminology. And that's what I mean by vision. It's not enough just to say, yeah, we disagree. Da, da, da. We need to actually project what kind of America we believe in. What kind of, and it's radically different than what it is today. It's about turning everything upside down. It's about changing the way government functions. It's about changing, you know, the way people think about government and its role. It is dramatic change, and we need to be up to that task instead of being, you know, and it's going to take. It's going to take a fight. And by the way, I don't believe we're the silent majority anymore. We're not a majority, not if you truly believe in a radical vision for this country. We're a minority. Our goal is to become a majority. But to do that, we have to be a lot more aggressive, and we have to be a lot more forward-thinking and inspiring and talk about the values that we believe, you know, we believe are important for this country.
Yeah, and it's finding that that the left is actually afraid of us, because now they're finding the new medium with it coming through on the internet with shows like this, with organizations such as Heritage, Americans for Prosperity, that we are starting to coalesce around a vision and, you know, a purpose. And I think they're afraid of us because they can't control what we're doing. You know, I'm here, a little independent guy, and if you turn around and go after the AP, it really doesn't mean too much to me, because here I am. I'm just in my little corner like a little spider waiting to grab you. I think they're afraid of us, and that's why they're trying this, what do they call it, the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, no, there's no question they're afraid of us, and a big chunk of what the reason they're afraid and what we need to learn about them is that they have nothing to offer. Their ideas are empty. Their ideas are bogus. They don't work. They're not effective, and they're anti-American, and you know, and they're afraid of people who have ideas. You know, and that's why for us we need to coalesce around a real agenda of ideas, and you know, I don't see the right doing that yet. I hope that's true, but I don't see it doing yet. And we have to coalesce about the right ideas, not just any ideas. And I think the Tea Party is great, but the Tea Party still hasn't coalesced around a real set of ideas, a real set of programs that present an alternative within the political world that we have. It's and we need focus, and we need that passion and vision.
Yeah. Now, you've got a fantastic book out that you wrote with Don Watkins. You know, I've got my autographed copy right here in front of me, which I want to thank you.
My pleasure.
Which I had to quickly try to speed read last night. Oh, my co-host is growling in the background. The free market revolution.
All I said was he was a suck up.
Did you not get a signed copy? Is that the problem?
No, my friend. That's fine. Thank you very much. But, quick, Annie. Let me interrupt. I have a quick question. You had mentioned something regarding the Tea Party needs to get more roots. Do you see that in the future, the Tea Party planting its roots and not really like looking to kind of merge with the GOP or form an alliance here and there. Do you look for them to kind of, in the future, be a party to be reckoned with? So kind of something like Perot first did?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, because I think that's the hope. If they merge in the GOP will take over. It will take them over and moderate them and water them down. And so I think it's a mistake to merge with the GOP. I think if the Tea Parties can remain independent, but if the but more importantly, the Tea Parties have to decide what they're about, and they have to focus on what they're about. You know, the Tea Party started as a movement around economic liberty, and that should be the focus. So, for example, in my view, social issues should be off the table. The Tea Party should not get involved one way or the other on social issues. Second, what does economic liberty mean? You know, are we just watered-down Republicans that want a slightly smaller budget and are fine with the government spending going up 3% every year? We just don't want it to go up 5% every year? I don't think so. I think we need to be real radicals when it comes to economic liberty. We need to talk about shrinking government, about cutting spending, not just cutting the rate of growth, but cutting spending. We need to be way more radical than Paul Ryan is in his budget. We need to say that budget is for wimps. That's not a good Tea Party budget. It needs to be a lot more than that. We need to push the idea of real limited government. But you see, this is the problem. You talk about limited government with Tea Parties, and what it really means is we need to be willing to challenge the existence of Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and these things that I think too many Americans just assume are just inherent in our lives, and they're not. But you cannot be for example, anti-Obamacare and pro-Medicare, in my view. If you're pro-Medicare, then you cannot sustain an attack on Obamacare. And this is why we lost the Obamacare debate. We lost the Obamacare debate because we're not consistent. If we're for free markets in medicine, we have to be against Medicare. Medicare is socialized health care for old people. If you're against socialized Medicare medicine, you're against socialized medicine for everybody. So we need that consistency, and I don't see that consistency in the Tea Party. There's too much fear of being radical. There's too much obsession about momentary political issues and not enough focus on the big picture, big fundamental issues that revolve around the future of this country. And until the Tea Party matures to the point where it's willing to take on these big issues, it will not be successful.
Now, I agree with you on that. Now, as the fact that I am disabled, so I am on Medicare, I would have preferred all that money that I paid into the system, that actually I would be able to take that dollar, those dollars, and shop around on my own for a private insurance company, allow me to purchase something across state lines, allow me to go into, you know, these pools that go through some of these senior organizations that, you know, get together and say, right, fine, we can offer you a discounted insurance if you know, join our organization. I would like to do that. I would like to be a consumer with my dollars. So here I am. I am a Tea Party person agreeing 100% with you. But the second they bring up the word Medicare and Medicaid, everyone's going, oh, you're pushing Granny off the cliff. No. Actually, what you're doing is by allowing me to privatize, I'm preventing you from pushing me over the cliff, because now I'm taking that layer of government away from between me and the doctor.
And the other thing that people have to realize is, look, you know, we pay into Medicare, that's true, but most baby boomers are going to consume $4 for every dollar they put into Medicare. And, of course, the dollar they put into Medicare was spent on other people a long time ago. It's gone. There is no dollar. So any money that we today spend on Medicare and that the baby boomers are going to spend in the future on Medicare is money taken by force from their children and grandchildren, and that realization has to sink in. We are committing with Medicare the largest cross generational wealth transfer in human history. This is the largest amount of money taken from one group of young people and given to the elderly, and we have to be willing to confront that and say, is that moral? Is that right? Is that American? Is that how America lives? I mean, what I'd like to see is us phasing out Medicare. You can't get rid of it, obviously, tomorrow. I think Paul Ryan's view of having vouchers is a good first step in that direction. But I think that somebody in their 20s or 30s should be told, there's not going to be Medicare for you. start saving, buy medical insurance. We're going to privatize the whole healthcare system, so costs are going to go down, because if you privatize it, it'll go down. We're going to completely deregulate the insurance market so that there's real insurance markets for people, you know, who have healthcare needs. And we're going to create a true free market system for healthcare, and we know that it's going to be 100 times better and quite a bit cheaper than anything we have today, because we know what private markets can do. We know that everywhere the private markets are tried, prices go down and quality goes up, and the same thing would happen in healthcare. But that's what Republicans should stand for, and they should stop running away from this idea of throwing Granny off the cliff, and maybe shift the debates. You know, shift it on the left. Let's take them all high ground and say to the left, okay, you think it's moral to be giving Granny $4 for every dollar she put in, and burdening, you know, our young generation with those $4. You want to lower the standard of living of our young people so that you can continue this government scam. So we need to flip it on the left. We need to capture the moral high ground and stop letting them dominate it.
And unfortunately, President Bush tried to do the same thing with Social Security, and he got excoriated on that. But if you think about it, if I were able
I don't think he did that with Social Security. What President Bush tried to do was to take a tiny little fraction of Social Security and privatize it. It was 1/16 or something like that. It was this tiny little program that wouldn't have – it was an unprincipled stand. It wouldn't have had any dramatic impact one way or the other. You know, we have to be consistent. We have to be bold. We have to be aggressive. We have to stand by our values. These timid proposals are not going to work. Once you accept that Social Security is legitimate, it's moral, it's good, it's fantastic, then you've lost the battle. Social Security is immoral. It's wrong. It's wrong to penalize responsible people and reward irresponsible people, because responsible people would save. Responsible people would do much better than Social Security. It's irresponsible people that Social Security really benefits. That's wrong. Intergenerational wealth transfers, those are wrong. We need to capture them all high ground on these issues, and then pose the question to the American people. Given that these programs are immoral, how do you want to reform them? You know, here's some options. We can do it this way, we can do it this way, we can do it this way. Let's have a referendum. Let's have a vote. I don't know, whatever. But we need to have bold ideas about how to change the system and be bold with the American people, not timid. The problem with Bush is he's with compassionate conservatives. You know, he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. He wanted to be a leftist and present that soft, everything's good, don't worry, be happy leftist position, and he wanted to tinker with some conservative ideas. You can't do that. We've got to be all in, and that's what I fear, that conservatives and the Tea Party are just too timid here, and by giving the left the moral high ground, we lose.
Well, I'm wondering now if these attacks the IRS had on the Tea Party groups, the 912s and the Patriot groups, maybe that's why the voice has been so timid. Maybe now with these hearings, and when people find out how much we were intimidated, we can now stand up united and say, see, we couldn't say anything because this is what they threatened us with. Maybe
I hope
so.
That would be terrific. That would be terrific. That would be a great outcome for this, and free those voices. And I do think there's some intimidation factor. There's some fear about what would happen. But I think, you know, look, the fate of this country is at stake over the next decade. I believe, this is not hyperbole, I believe that the fate of Western civilization is at stake over the next decade. We need to get our act together. We need to be aggressive. We cannot be timid. Let the IRS come after us. Okay, you want to fight? Let's have a fight. But you know, we need to be bold, and we need to stake out our claim, and the claim primarily is around, again, the moral high ground. You know, who has the moral high ground? And I think those of us who believe in free markets have the moral high ground, and we need to be willing to stand up for that.
All right. Now, you're the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, and I want you to give the listeners a little bit of a background to you. I just glossed over some of the highlights, but you've got a very storied background, too, which I want you to explain to the audience. so that they can come to know you too.
Just my personal biography.
Yeah.
I mean, I was born and raised in Israel, you know, like most Israelis at the time when I was raised, I was a socialist when I was young. And until I read Atlas Shrugged, and I encourage everybody to read Atlas Shrugged. If you haven't read it, you should read it. And I read Atlas Shrugged, and it changed my life. It fundamentally changed my ideas. And, since then, I've been devoted to Ayn Rand's ideas and to trying to bring those ideas to the forefront of the culture and to the forefront of the culture debate, whether I, you know, doing that as an individual and arguing with everybody when I was young, or now as the person responsible for the Ayn Rand Institute. I spent 3 years in the Israeli army, like all Israelis do. I got an undergraduate degree in engineering at the Israeli Institute of Technology. I then immigrated to the United States to go to school, got my MBA, got my PhD in finance, became a finance professor. And for the last 12 years, I've been running the Ayn Rand Institute, and really, I think, at the forefront of the battle for freedom in this country. I think Ayn Rand's ideas are desperately needed today if we're going to win this battle.
Absolutely. Now, who was Ayn Rand, and why is she so important and influential today?
Well, Rand was born in 1905. She was born in Russia to a middle-class Jewish family. Her original name was Alicia Rosenblum. And, she witnessed the Russian Revolution. She witnessed communism, and she lived under communism in her teens. She went to university in communist Soviet Union, but she escaped. At the first opportunity where Leonid allowed people out, you know, for a short visit, she managed to get a visa to get out of the Soviet Union, come and visit the U.S., knowing that she would never go back to the Soviet Union. She landed up getting a job in Hollywood. Her dream was to become a writer. She did become a writer on Hollywood. But ultimately, what she's known for is that she became an author of, you know, best-selling books. The ones that most of your listeners might be familiar with are Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, I think two of the greatest books written in the 20th century, certainly two American classics. And again, I think any American concerned about the future of America should read these books. She then, after the publication of Atlas Shrugged, she went on to write many nonfiction works, articles that were later turned into books. What she presents in those articles and books, what is presented in Atlas Shrugged, is really a new philosophy, a philosophy of liberty, a philosophy of freedom, a philosophy that kind of completes, in my view, the revolution that the founding fathers of this country started. It presents a new ethical code, a new code of morality that is consistent with capitalism. I think the old code is inconsistent with capitalism, and I think that's why we keep failing, is we keep trying to merge capitalism with an old code of morality that just is not workable. She defends capitalism. She defends it morally, but she defends it philosophically. So she comes up with a new philosophy that is a principled defense of capitalism, I think, for the first time in human history.
Having read Atlas Shrugged a few times, I see so many similarities in there. You seeing the same thing that I'm seeing, that, you know, this everything she predicted is actually happening, especially with
yes.
this IRS thing with
there
the
no
Congress.
Question.
And I'm going, this is not an Ayn Rand moment. What is?
Absolutely. I think since 2008, but really the last 50 years have been Ayn Rand moment after Ayn Rand moment after Ayn Rand moment. I mean, basically what Ayn Rand did was in 1957 when Atlas Shrugged was published, during the 50s when she wrote the book, she identified the weakness in American culture. And she basically said, look, if this weakness is not addressed, it's not a weakness, it's a disease. If this disease is not addressed, then these are the consequences. This is what has to happen. And as she would tell you, she wrote Atlas Shrugged so that it wouldn't happen. In a sense, we have to say she failed, because it is happening. the destruction of American civilization, of American culture, of the American economy is happening very much in the way that she predicted it would happen in Atlas Shrugged. And it's happening for the reason she identified. She identified the fact that in America, we had a philosophy, even during the 50s, that was fundamentally anti-freedom. It was fundamentally anti the principles of the Founding Fathers. And as long as we stick to those ideas, we will lose. And the most important of those ideas are the ethics. The ethic of self-sacrifice, the ethic of selflessness is not consistent with a market economy. It's not consistent with individual liberty. It's not consistent with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are self-interested. They're about me making the most of my life. There's nothing in the Declaration of Independence about maximizing social utility, about doing what's good for your neighbor, about sacrificing for a higher cause. It's all about individual's right to live his life as he sees fit. And this is what I think, unfortunately, conservatives miss. They miss the individualism, the inherent individualism in our founding documents. This country, the revolution that is this country, it wasn't a revolution about taxes. It was a revolution about an idea, about the idea of whose life is this? Who do you belong to, in a sense, right? Are you a property of the state or of the king or of the tribe or of the clan or of your, you know, of your government or of the nation or whatever collective? Or do you, in a sense, do you belong to yourself? Is your life yours to live as you see fit? And the Founding Fathers come clearly on the side of your life is yours, and therefore government has no, your neighbors and government have no right to tell you what to think, how to act, what to do, what not to do. As long as you are not violating other people's rights, government has no business in your life. And I'm talking about local government and state government and federal government. They're supposed to butt out. They're supposed to leave you alone, protect you from crooks and criminals and invaders and terrorists and fraudsters, arbitrary disputes. And other than that, you should be left alone. That is the principle of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And we have moved so radically away from that principle over the last 120 or so years that it's not, America is not recognizable. The Founding Fathers, if they came here, would not recognize this as the country that they founded. And what Ayn Rand recognized is the reason we've moved away from that, because we've moved away from an ethic of individualism, from an ethic of self-interest, to an ethic of collectivism, an ethic of selflessness, an ethic of where community service today is more important than building a business and creating stuff. And you see that in Obama, in Michelle Obama's public statements, where they tell young people, don't go into business, you know, go become community activists. That's what's important. No, business is what's important. Business is moral. Business is ethical. Building a business is the best thing you can do for your life, not because it helps me, but because it helps you. So, you know, being self-interested, being motivated by your own values and by your own interests, and doing it in a way without violating the rights of others, that is what this country is about. And both on the left and the right, remember John McCain's campaign? I mean, I flipped out when I saw John McCain's campaign slogan. It was country first. Now, the Founding Fathers would never, ever, ever say something like that. That is fascism. To put the country ahead of the individual is pure fascism. This country is about the individual first, not about country first. It's about the individual's rights first. It's about freedom and liberty first, not country first. So these are the kind of things Republicans and conservatives keep slipping into, the collectivism that I think is so destructive to the cause of liberty and the cause of America.
I think you just gave the entire plot to the Fountainhead right there.
Really like, Doc, how the last several guests we've had, Doc, including yourself, I really like how you explain it in layperson terms. I think a lot of times when it's explained by sometimes these so-called educators or the people on television, sometimes they're using words that people just get so confused. They don't know what the hell anything means. I think you're doing a great job in the ABCs of this.
Well, thank you. I mean, but it is all about the ABCs. If we cannot communicate effectively, if we can't get people fired up, if we can't communicate with them and tell them what exactly we're about, we're not about some abstract ideas. we're about real life. We're about day-to-day, how it impacts you day-to-day, then we will not win. And again, we need to be radical. We need to go after the entitlement state and challenge it at its core. We need to go after the regulatory state and challenge it at its core. We believe in true freedom where the government doesn't regulate and doesn't redistribute. It leaves people alone and lets markets function.
Yeah, it's funny. We got someone in the chat room. I am afraid this person may or may not be a troll, but they wrote that none of us have ever met or spoken to any of the founding fathers. We do not know what they would have said or thought. But that's an outright lie. We have their writings. We have their speeches. We know because you got the Federalist Papers. You've got George Washington's farewell address. You've got the letters between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And we can go on and on and on. We have their words. We know what their intent is.
I think that's absolutely right, but it's more than that. I'm not using the founding fathers as an authority figures. You know, maybe they were wrong, and indeed, there's some things I disagree with Jefferson on. There's some things I disagree with Madison on. The point is not their authority. The point is that I believe that the fundamental system that they set up was a just, right, good moral system. I'm an immigrant, right? I came to this country because of the system the founding fathers set up. That's what I'm relating back to the founding fathers. What we have today is inconsistent with it, and I believe based on their intention and based on their writings that they would be horrified by what is going on today. Is that a reason to change things today? No, but it just suggests that we've moved a long way from that original system of the founding. We've perverted those original documents dramatically. And that's an objective statement. That has nothing to do with your interpretation of what the founding said or didn't say. You know, we do not practice the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness anymore. Those are meaningless. And the Constitution has become a piece of paper that is ignored and is meaningless today in our discussions. Indeed, you saw that with the Obamacare decision. If you can't get it through using this clause, we'll just pervert this other clause to make it so. The Constitution has become meaningless in this country. The courts cannot interpret it because they don't know what it means. They don't have the intellectual capacity to understand the Constitution. And as a consequence, it's irrelevant what happens in the Supreme Court these days because, it's just a question of what pace do they completely walk away from the Constitution.
And amen to that, because it's become more of a groupthink that you're seeing. You know, instead of saying, all right, these are the words that were written. This was the intent because we have their writings. We have the notes they took at the Constitutional Convention. We have the letters between the authors of these documents. We know what the intent is. These are the words. This is the structure. This is the foundation that this building we call the United States of America is built upon. So if you try to crumble that foundation, the whole thing is going to fall. And which is what is happening today, and no one understands that. They keep on saying it's a living document. BS. No, it's not.
Well, it's a little bit more subtle than that, though, because it's not so much just the words that they say. It's the principles on which it is founded. There are certain principles, and those principles lie not just in the founders, but in what was going on in the Enlightenment and what the thinkers of the time were saying to understand the context. But there are principles here. And you cannot understand the Constitution unless you understand the principles on which it is founded. And the principles, in my view, are in the Declaration. And unfortunately, I don't think there's a Supreme Court judge, and I don't care if he's on the right or the left, who understands the Declaration of Independence. Because if you understand I don't think they have an understanding of what an individual right means. What does it mean to say that somebody has an unalienable right to their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? And unless you understand what that statement says, you cannot interpret the Constitution. That is the principle on which the Constitution is based. The government is there to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to protect our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And unfortunately, I see this again from both conservative judges and liberal judges. They don't understand what that actually means. So they go digging for stuff that's irrelevant when it's pretty simple. And, you know, unless I'm coercing somebody else, the government has no business in my life. That's what the Declaration means. Thomas Jefferson said, "And unless you have your hand in my pocket, what do I care what you do in your house? What do I care?"
That is perfect. That is perfect.
Because I believe what you just said perfectly about the Declaration. I believe that the Declaration supersedes absolutely everything because the Declaration actually tells we the people to throw off government.
Yep.
I mean,
yep. It's the foundation for the revolution. It's a foundation for starting a new country. It's a foundation for establishing what was later on formalized in a constitution. It articulates the principles on which this country was founded, and that's the document that we need to study. We need to go back and understand what individual rights really mean, what they meant, but what their actual meaning in reality is. And unless we do that, we do not have a chance of understanding the Constitution, and I think we are failing. And that's the source, I think, of many of our problems. Now, unfortunately, I can't stay until 12:45.
Okay.
I had a meeting come up that I have to go at around 12:05. Hopefully I don't mess you up completely.
All right, well, it's my time, 3 o'clock. No, we've got tons of stuff that we have, and we've got a chat room that is just really lively. And this is one argument, just before you go, that drives me crazy. There's one person in the chat room keeps on saying that the Founding Fathers had no way of knowing about current issues, you know, the economy, gun control, health care. But I think they did. And the reason why they limited the Constitution is to prevent invasion in these areas.
Absolutely.
And I think they did understand gun control, because back in 1782, the British were using the Scott-Knock, which is a semi-shot gun. They were already experimenting with new weapons and new technologies. They just knew they could not predict, so they made the document so it would restrict.
Yeah, and I think with economy and healthcare, it's even easier. What they understood was individuals' right to make decisions for themselves, and that the government doesn't, other their neighbors, put aside government, their neighbors have no right to tell them how to live their lives. So translate that to economic. What role does the government have in the economy? None. I mean, just leave us alone. We know how to trade. We know how to make stuff. We know how to build stuff. Americans are entrepreneurial. What do you need the government for? The government is a constraint limiting us, and that's exactly what the Founding Fathers wanted to eliminate. Or health care. Why does the government get to tell me what drugs I can or cannot take? What medication I can or cannot take for cancer if I'm dying of cancer? Why can't I make that decision with my doctor based on information that is provided to me, you know, in the marketplace? Why does the government get to tell me what drug I can take or not take when I'm dying or when I'm not dying, or in any case, right? What business is it of my neighbor what I do inside my house, including what kind of medications I choose to take? So that's just one example. What doctor I see, or how much I pay my doctor. Why is that? Where in the framework of thinking does that answer? Yes, it's absolutely true. The founders were not socialists. You know, and that's why they did not want the government interceding in these kind of problems. You think they didn't have problems in the 18th century where in Europe the government was solving those problems for people? Sure they were, and the founders explicitly reject that idea. They say no, individuals have to take care of themselves. Government's job is not to take care of people. Government's job is not to redistribute wealth. Government's job is not to intervene in the economy and tell people how they should and shouldn't behave. Now, they should have been more explicit, and I think if they had the knowledge we have today, they would have been much more explicit in the Constitution and much clearer in the Constitution about their intent. I would have made the Constitution a lot simpler, but a lot more explicit. You know, government has no role in the economy. You want separation of church and state? Well, there should be separation of economics and state, and separation of education and state, and separation of science and state. That pretty much captures everything.
Absolutely, it does. Now, you've got a conference coming up in July, July 5th to 11th in Chicago. This is going to be at the Westin Michigan Avenue Hotel, where you're going to be speaking, and it's a week-long event?
It's a week-long event. You're going to have lots of different you know, courses. There's, for example, a whole course on Obamacare and the free market kind of alternative to it. There are courses on policy issues, but there are also courses on philosophical issues, on deep, you know, deep issues. There are talks on both philosophical issues, on policy issues, on just fun stuff. With, you know, Chicago is the city of Frank Lloyd Wright, the great architect. So we're going to be spending a little time talking about Frank Lloyd Wright. You know, it's just a fun gathering of people who are united by an admiration for Ayn Rand's ideas. And I encourage everybody to come. You can find it on our website. AynRand.org, AynRand.org. Look for the Objectivist Conferences, the 2013, as you said, it's in Chicago. Starts on July 5th, carries on for about a week. You don't have to come for a week. You can come for a day. You can come for a weekend. You can come for 4 days. You can come for however long you want. But I think you'll experience something very unique. And if you remember Galt Gulch from Atlas Shrugged, people who come to this conference say, you know, it felt like a week in Galt Gulch because you spent a week with people who share your ideas, who you don't have to hide from, you don't have to hold back. You can actually say what you really think about a whole array of issues, not just about politics, because philosophy, of course, is much deeper than just politics.
Absolutely. And I wish you good luck on that. And there is a link to your website, AynRand.org, on the show page, as well as to your book, The Free Market Revolution. I recommend everyone pick this up and read it. It makes
a nice set
along with the Ayn Rand's on my bookcase.
Wonderful. I appreciate that a lot. And you know, and I'd be happy to come back anytime. I know I think we'd confirmed to 3:45, but something came up here.
Oh, that's all right. Well,
that's great. We're glad
welcome.
To have you. Always a pleasure to have you on, Doc. Always.
Thank you, and I'd be happy to come back again.
Well, I'm hoping to meet up with you in Chicago myself. I'm about 3 hours from there, so I'm hoping to go.
Fabulous, fabulous. Look forward to meeting you in person.
Absolutely.
And Mikey is fun to speak with in person. Trust me on that.
I'm sure.
I won't panhandle
a book. Well, thank you, guys.
And I will be talking with your office to set up another interview with you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. That was fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. Dr. Yaron Brook, man, I love talking to this man every single time. He's always so fascinating. Absolutely so
Amen.
Fascinating. Absolutely.
Amen. And you know, in a lot of ways, Annie, those who were not born here have such a greater appreciation and understanding of all of this. I mean, it's just not taken for granted for a lot of people. They know, I mean, it's just, I can't say it any different than I did. They just have such an understanding of this.
Yeah, now someone just posted in the chat room, our friend Mark, that he wanted the podcast. Mark, after the show, on the little video, there's an embed code that you can get the podcast code to put it up on your websites. Also, we're up on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on Blu-ray, we're on YFrog, we're all over the place. Plus, check out our new website that we built, which is southernsense.webs, that's WEBS.com. That link is also up on the show page. Or just Google Southern Sense and the website will pop up. We're going to open the call lines. How does that sound?
Great. Do you mind if I play a quick little, not a commercial, but it's Ronald Reagan. It's about 3.5 minutes.
All right, and then let people know the call-in line is 917-889-3675. So we'll take your calls and get your impression of our guest.
Yep.
Here we go.
I clicked on it, so it's spinning. So it'll start playing when it starts playing. But I think in so many ways Ronald Reagan had just this great philosophy. And although he wasn't.
One side in this campaign has been telling us that the issues of this election are the maintenance of peace and prosperity. The line has been used, we've never had it so good.
I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him, he's going to help me.
But I have an uncomfortable feeling that this prosperity isn't something on which we can base our hopes for the future.
The key point I'm making right now is that the economy is moving in a positive direction.
And yet our government continues to spend $17 million a day more than the government takes in.
You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? The answer, yes, I'm telling you.
We've raised our debt limit 3 times in the last 12 months. And now our national debt is 1.5 times bigger than all the combined debts of all the nations of the world.
We're going to raise the debt limit. We always have. We will do it again.
We have $15 billion in gold in our treasury. We don't own an ounce.
I have been informed by that the majority plans to block consideration of this amendment, which is number 1367, regarding the transparency at the Federal Reserve.
Foreign dollar claims are $27.3 billion.
He said that China has now surpassed Japan as the U.S. government's largest creditor, owning at least 10% of all U.S. debt, perhaps as much as $700 billion.
And we've just had announced that the dollar of 1939 will now purchase 45 cents in its total value.
President Obama is expected to face tough questions over the U.S. decision to pump $600 billion freshly printed dollars into its economy. Now, the move is an attempt to revive the country's finances, but will result in a devaluation of the dollar.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars.
We've got to give them a stake in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours,
you'll construct a legal regime to make indefinite detention legal.
History will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
For some trips, it'll be faster than flying, without the pat-down.
Anna was picked to go through. Pretty much everybody except the baby was picked to go through the scanner.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on Earth.
Damn America, that's in the Bible.
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
I've got a core set of values that I think have to be advanced, and that my individual salvation depends on our collective salvation.
You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
We had an election, and it was about a direction for our country.
And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course. In this vote harvesting time, they use terms like the Great Society, or as we were told a few days ago by the President, we must accept a greater government activity in the affairs of the people.
E pluribus unum, out of many, one. In the end, that's what this election is about.
Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Over the course of 10 years, it would cost what it would cost us. It would cost us about the same as it would cost.
Is that it? That over? I guess I lost my co-host.
No, you all didn't. Right. You didn't at all. I love that. I love that. I've played that a couple of times. This is Ronald Reagan. What envision did he see 40 years ago? I believe he was actually running for the first term of presidency. I'm not sure whether it was against, I don't know, but it was obviously 30, 40 years ago. I mean, look at him. I mean, talking about the same problems.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, someone was mentioning in the chat room about Alexander Hamilton forming the Bank of the United States. But Alexander Hamilton, even though he was a Federalist, which believed in bigger government than, say, for example, Aaron Burr did, or George Washington, or John Adams, even he believed there should have been restrictions on government's growth, and it should be very limited in whatever it did. You know, and you think about it, every single time someone has made a national bank like the Bank of America or now the Fed, something always goes wrong. So don't you think by now, after over 200 years, we would get it in our heads that we shouldn't have a federal bank? You know, our money should be backed by a gold and silver standard, something tangible that has value. So our dollar will increase in value instead of devalue, which the federal government's now doing with quantum easing, what, 21 now?
Absolutely. And even Ronald Reagan talked about the dollar of 1939 being worth more than when he spoke, whatever year that was taking place. I mean, we seriously need to make... it only goes so long before the Titanic hits the iceberg and sinks. It's that simple. It's that simple. It's going to implode unless we do something. And if we wait to that point, Annie, it becomes way too late. Then you have anarchy.
Right. Well, why don't we see if we can get a couple of people that are up in the chat room to wake up and dial in and speak with us on air. It's 917-889-3675. You know, we're talking about expansive government. You know, the IRS scandal is growing because now they've got this video of them at these conferences, $5 million for a single conference of, what was it, 2,000 people. You got now the EPA, which we discussed last week. We brought this up, and finally the news outlets are starting to pick it up with the EPA picking and choosing on who would they allow permits to on various regulations. If you happen to have been a green progressive company, you got that permit within a matter of weeks. If you happen to be someone who is not a green progressive company, that you happen to have conservative backing, then all of a sudden those permits seem to take quite a long, long, long time. Now, their friends got the permits with little or no fees being put up, whereas the conservatives, those that swung to the right, ended up paying the full entire fee plus. And plus, they always had to have all these attorneys to help them get the permits, so they were paying through the wazoo. So here's another one, guys. This is another example of this administration using regulations to silence a viewpoint.
Very true. Our two cents should call in. He makes a comment, just because the dollar, because the Federal Reserve has brought our dollar down 95% doesn't mean we should do away with it. Okay. If you're picked up for shoplifting a couple times a week, doesn't necessarily mean you're a klepto. I mean, the bottom line is we have seen what happens. This is big business. And the reason it's there is because we've seen what happened. Andrew Jackson had it the best way set up. He attacked before he even mentioned we were leaving the Federal Reserve and wiped those people out. John Kennedy talked about it, and they wiped him out. The Federal Reserve is nothing more than trillionaires basically controlling economies everywhere.
Yeah, it's
we need to back it up by precious metal. If we have gold, go ahead, Andy.
The Federal Reserve is not even controlled by the government. It is a private institution that is controlling our nation's currency. Now, if that's not one of the dumbest things I have ever heard, you know, tell me something else. And I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'm very happy to sell you.
Well, he's in New York, so he might be buying.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. You know, when we had our currency backed by something substantial, gold or silver, the value of the currency would increase. Therefore, the value of your possessions would increase. So if you own a home, the value would increase naturally along with the value of the currency. The amount of interest we paid on debt would be lower. It's reverse thinking. And the Fed has not been audited. And as I understand, there are actually billions upon billions of dollars that are unaccounted for. But because the Fed is a private institute and not subject to federal banking laws, no one's questioning this. Where is our money going? Why is it missing?
Now, Annie, you bring up a great point. All right. Everybody, you better get in. We're about to have a big disagreement. Now, do you believe that the Federal Reserve should be audited?
Absolutely. Up and down, back and forth, just like any other regular bank. The Federal Reserve should also be subject to all of the federal banking laws every other bank across the United States is subject to. They should not be an entity unto themselves. They should not be a god to our economy.
And is that for the record?
Absolutely, on the record.
Okay, great. Well, you're a big cheerleader for charter schools. They're not accountable to anyone. They hire a private company with taxpayer money and all of a sudden they're not required to.
Not true. Not true. Charter schools still have to apply the state and have to still meet certain guidelines. Here, especially in the state of South Carolina, you can be licensed by either the state or by the local district. Now, which means they have to meet certain standards. They have to have certain things in their curriculum. So, yes, they are still regulated. But they're a little bit freer in the curriculum. But who is regulating those charter schools? The parents that are paying the tuition. They are the ones that are monitoring the school to make sure that their student, their child, gets the best education better. This is the free capitalist market in full bloom and working, guys.
But if you want to go and look at their books, they'll tell you to go to hell because they don't have to show you their books.
Not necessarily. And necessarily. Each state is different. Now, here in the state of South Carolina, the public can go over to the charter school and say, hey, listen, I'm interested. I want to see what the school books are. And the charter schools, 99% of them will open up those books and say, this is the curriculum.
No. Financial books. I'm talking like you can go to a public school district.
Here in the state of South Carolina, they must have their finances open and upfront.
Okay.
And a lot of times they're published in the newspaper.
They aren't in Michigan. All right.
Michigan, get it changed.
Well, of course, South Carolina is a lot smarter than dummies here in Michigan. But no, I just want to, just for clarification purposes, in Michigan you can't, which is totally beyond ridiculous. Here's the problem lies with us. It just absolutely lies with us. We can change this. We can make the changes we want. But we need to do it. We need to take more involvement. And we need a greater amount. Judge Napolitano said it the best, that during the revolution, a third of the people wanted to remain with the king, and another third didn't even care. I mean, we have to care, because we'll lose what we don't. I mean, it's that simple, and we're losing it.
Well, you know, this brings me back to what a previous guest had on, when we had Niger Innes here from the Congress for Racial Equality. And, you know, he said that he's seeing a change in the attitude, because I asked him the question, do you see now a lot of the youth revolting against the progressive education they've been given? And he said a month ago he would have said no, until he gave that speech and they got a standing ovation. You know, our attitude are changing. It's not fast. It's not going to be overnight. But hey, we're changing one mind at a time, and that's important. That's important. That's important to everyone else there in the chat room that joins these shows, that do host shows. You know, feel like you are doing something. Be enthusiastic about it. If you're enthusiastic, it's contagious. And that's what we have to do. We have to be a contagion. We have to be contagion in the side of the left. Oh, Lord, help me on that one.
Well, it's true. If you think about the campaigns, Barack Obama got elected on excitement.
Yeah,
it was new, it was fresh, but
I mean, that is a legitimate prayer. Please, Lord, give us the strength to keep this fight going. And it's something that I always say when I'm writing to someone to find that, you know, one of the military family members or friend had passed. And I says, no, they had the courage to go out there and fight to protect our liberties. Give me the courage to do it here at home, one mind at a time.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Doc Jones gets a minute. He should dial us up to say hello. We haven't heard his voice in a while. It all lies with us.
Absolutely.
Do we really, really want this? Do we really, really want this? It starts with me.
It does.
Gas in Michigan now went up to like $4.15. All over the posting all the comments. All over the internet. I said, you want to know who's responsible for those gas prices? Look no further than a mirror. Because states need to be independently energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan can't worry about Wisconsin. Wisconsin can't worry about South Carolina. Blah, 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 blah. We all need to be energy efficient of its own entity. And we're not.
Precisely.
That simple.
I agree. Now, we have gas prices that are a lot lower here in South Carolina. I didn't look to see what they were today, but last when I saw them last night, they were $3.29. So you've got a big gulp there. But we also have the lowest tax on the gas That's a benefit here. We have, because we are a port city, we have a easier access to it. But I agree. I mean, here we got the Keystone Pipeline that's going to be going in, all right? Everyone's thinking, oh, my goodness, Keystone Pipeline, we're finally going to be self-energy efficient. Well, guess what, guys? They're not going to end up renewing or permitting any new fracking. So all this gasoline from the sand shells and everything else that we were expecting to come down that pipeline has now been cut off, courtesy of the EPA and the federal government. So here we got a pipeline that's going to be empty.
Wow.
Your government dollars at work, guys, and you wonder why we want them out of our lives and out of our business.
Well, if you really look at it, there are only a few things that the government can do and do decently. If we were to audit the way they spend our money militarily, we would flip out too. But we do have the best military on the planet. That is what keeps us afloat, is the fact that we are a military superpower.
Yeah, but not for long.
Yes, you're right. And we're going to have to become an economic superpower again if we want to sustain that. You know, we have got to take greater involvement with local and state politics. And at the federal level, we need to hold our politicians accountable. Several years ago, the same week that the Obama Affordable Health Care Act the Supreme Court came back and said 5-4 that they could use it as a tax. Earlier in that week was the Arizona law regarding the borders, and basically an 8-0 return by our Supreme Court that said, "Look, you can't have 50 different laws. They're your politicians. If you don't like them, get rid of them. Make them enforce them." That's basically what it said. But yet we don't. And when we don't tell these people to close the doors or to have somebody watch the front door, we can't be surprised when people are walking in, sitting at our living room table. I mean, it all starts with us. Wake up.
Absolutely. It does start with us. And I'll have you know, Annie once again is putting her money where her mouth is. About a week or two ago, I read a newspaper article in our local Progressive Rag that the county that I live in wants to increase property taxes. Not a portion of a percent, not maybe 1 or 2%, but the maximum allowed by state of 4.86%. And I looked at that, I did, oh my God, 4.86% increase on your property tax. Now, this is the millage rate. Now, that's going to affect every single homeowner, whether it's a first home or a second home. They have property tax on your vehicles, property tax on your boats, property tax on your rentals, property tax on your business equipment, property tax on your business computer, chairs, desk, inventory. So every single item that we touch here in this county will increase 4.86% in price. And they're doing this as of July 1st, because they have a new budget going into effect on July 1st, right 6 months before Obamacare hits. Now, people are not hiring, homes are not selling, but because your home value has dropped, the county feels they need to take more money from you to make up for their budget abuse, 4.86%. So Annie has already sent out a message to every single Tea Party member in the Beaufort County area. If you're here in Beaufort County, South Carolina, listening in, check our Beaufort Tea Party website. It's up there on the homepage. And I will be there in the county council. So if any county council member is listening, we are coming armed and we are coming ready and baited for bear. We're coming after you.
Go get them.
But this is what we have to do. We have to start at the local level and kick butt and then work up to the state level and the federal level and just keep on kicking that butt until we take this nation back.
I agree. It's we have got to take back with firm hands and with taxpayers. You know, the peasants used to do it with shovels and pitchforks. I mean, it used to be a big
bring
joke.
Out those tars and feathers. And the actual politicians have been tarred and feathered. Right on the steps in Washington. And it's time
very
to
true.
Put back the tar and feathers. Whether it's a metaphysical term, but if you do it through the newspaper, if you do it through your emails, if you do it through your phone calls and your faxes and knocking on doors, bring out that tar and feathers and show these politicians what we stand for, and they cannot take our money without being responsible for it. Hey, listen, you know, we got, speaking of which, taking back our country, you know who our guest is on Friday?
Nope.
He is the youngest person to run for Congress from the great state of Virginia, Ron Mayer. He's been making his round on Fox and all the other news stations. He is a avid conservative. He's got a fantastic message. And the day he gets elected and sworn in, he will be legally of age to be a U.S. congressman. Got to check out his website, ronmayer.com. It's up on the show page for Friday. Check him out. I do have a link to his campaign page. You can listen to some of his videos prior to the show. But he's going to be joining us on Friday.
That's exactly it. Perfect. That is exactly it. Getting the young youth involved. It starts with me. Sometimes, and Annie, I think it's, oh, I know we're winding down, but sometimes I think it's almost a shame for us as adults that we have to, that the children sometimes seem to be the smartest one of all.
Well, they are our future, and if we don't raise them to be smarter than we are, then they're bound to commit the same mistakes we have. It's as simple as that. Just look at it that way. Hey, we've made these mistakes. Let's show you what we did and what mistakes we made so you don't do it. And that's how we have to do it. And this kid has seen the mistakes. He wants to go to D.C. to help correct them. You know, following Ron, we have on following Tuesday, Matt Fitzgibbons, who's got patriotic music and a good message on unity. And we did confirm for June 14th, the following Friday, Ayla Brown, who is former Senator Scott Brown from Massachusetts, daughter, the one that played basketball. She's got a new CD out also, which is patriotic music. She'll be with us only for the first half of the show, and then she has to run. So we'll probably open the show up to callers and other guest hosts, whatever. I don't know what we'll do, but we'll fill in the second half of the show. So we got great things coming up. Plus, I have another new author, Dan Lyon, who's got a great book out called Washington's Vision, which I just started reading, and it is great read. It's fast read. It's a fun read. It's using history and the Bible and predicting certain events. And so far in his first book, as I understand it, everything he wrote about has come true. So the second book, I'm reading it to see how much of what he wrote about is actually coming true today. It's like a modern day Ayn Rand, but using our history and the Bible. So we're going to have some great guests. So I hope everyone will join us back again on Friday when we do have Ron Mayer. I forgot who I was just talking about. Ron Mayer on here. So we'll be back here again the same bat time, same bat station. I want to thank everyone, all the Maris people that participated in the chat room. A lot of good comments up there. We deeply appreciate that. So I hope you enjoyed the show and you take the podcast and pass it around to your friends. So until Friday, good night, God bless, and have a safe week.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
You've
face.
Been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio, and Freedom Media Network. Southern sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Stand up, let's make it loud, Americans.